This story follows immediately after the story from last week. Jesus last week was in Capernaum, and so now he's traveling around the Galilee, has traveled a bit southwest to Nain. He comes to the gate of a city, and he sees a procession, a funeral procession. This would have probably been a fairly noisy affair. It might have been kind of like, I think they call it the second line in New Orleans. There would have been flutes playing. There would have been people mourning. It wouldn't be joyful necessarily, but weeping and wailing. And along with it, a body on a stretcher. The body would be wrapped in linen, probably the spices and ointments already included to cover the stench of decomposition that would eventually come. They're taking a young man out to be buried. Luke tells us that this young man is the only son of a widow. Now, you probably already know that when the Hebrew Bible wants to describe the people who are at the very bottom of the social ladder, the poorest of the poor, they're referred to as widows and orphans, because those folks in that society had little or no visible means of support. If a woman had a husband, she depended on that husband. If she had a son, she depended on that son. If, like this widow, she had no husband or son, she would have been cast adrift in a society that had little place for her, except for the compassion of the community. Well, apparently there were a number of people who knew them, because there was a large crowd in this procession. When Jesus sees them, he has compassion. And he tells the widow something that seems crazy to us. He tells her not to weep. She's doing the natural thing for someone who has lost not only her son, but now her whole life, perhaps, in that context. But then he simply reaches out and touches either the stretcher that the body is on or the body, which would have rendered him ritually unclean. And he speaks. And the young man takes a breath. And out of death comes life. And there is this huge celebration by everyone gathered there, because this widow is no longer cast off. She's no longer at the bottom of society, and she has had her son given back to her. That's the language that's used. Jesus gave her son back to her. Now, anyone who was familiar with the Jewish tradition and the Hebrew Bible listening to this story would have another story rattling around in their head. A story that is so strikingly similar, you just can't miss it. It has to do with another prophet, Elijah. Elijah had traveled to Zarephath. There he met a widow, and when he asked her for food, she said, "We don't have any food. My son and I have no food." Now, we're not told that this is her only son, but there are no other children mentioned in the story. Elijah says, "Go to the pot that holds the flour, go to the pot that holds the oil, take what you have, mix it, there will be plenty, and when you go back, there will be more." And sure enough, that's what happens. And he stays with the widow and her son. And he stays for a fairly extended period. After a time, though, the son dies. And Elijah, being a house guest, takes it upon himself to do the right thing. After all, he's been extended hospitality. He takes the body of the son into the room where he's been sleeping. He casts his body on the body of the son three times, calls out to God for help, and the son breathes again, and life comes out of death. Now, anybody hearing that story about Jesus would immediately think of the story of Elijah and the widow at Zarephath. Very familiar story. In fact, Jesus refers to it when he goes back home to preach. When he goes back to the synagogue in Nazareth, one of the two examples he gives is to say that there were plenty of widows in Israel, But Elijah chose a widow from Zarephath and raised her son. The similarities are such that I think what Luke is doing is he's making a comparison between Jesus and Elijah. People are asking, who is this Jesus anyway? Is he Elijah returned? Because you see, since Elijah never passed through death but was taken to God without having to die, in the Jewish tradition, he could appear at any given moment. That's why there is a chair left vacant at the Passover meal for Elijah, the door left cracked for Elijah to come in. That's why there are numerous folk tales about encountering Elijah in the form of a beggar and in other forms. So some are saying this is Elijah. That's who Jesus is, because clearly he is a prophet. So Luke, I think, is telling this story to say, yes, he is a prophet, but he's more than a prophet. And that more than a prophet comes, I think, in the differences between the two stories, not the similarities. We've already run through the similarities, but there are several really important differences. First of all, when Elijah heals the widow's son, it is, to some extent, a quid pro quo. They have welcomed him into the house. Even though he makes sure they have food, they have offered him hospitality. And in return, of course, if he has the power to call out to God on behalf of that son, he would do it. They did something before he did. In the Jesus story, Jesus has never met this woman. Jesus knows nothing about the son. They have not given him anything. They haven't even asked for his help. He simply interrupts a funeral procession, tells a mother who's just lost her son not to weep, and brings the son to life. Second difference is that when Elijah does this act, it's done in private. He and the son are the only two there. He and the son and God, to whom he calls out. When Jesus does it, it's a very public event. It's at the city gate. There are processions of people, crowds of people around the widow. It's a very, very public event. This helps to define, not just in that area, because the word went out throughout the countryside, who is this Jesus? And then finally, a third difference is that when Elijah brings that widow's son back to life, there is a long and complicated procedure involved where he casts his body upon the son's body and calls out to God for help. He does that three times. But with Jesus, it's really just a touch and a word. Very simple. I think what Luke is trying to do is to say that Jesus, yes, is a prophet, but different from Elijah. Because you see, if Elijah responds because he has been shown kindness and hospitality, Jesus responds out of a compassion that takes the initiative before we have done anything. For me, this story is about what John Wesley calls prevenient grace. That love and presence of God that is with us before we know it's with us, before we know to ask for it. We don't have to do anything to earn it. There is nothing we can do to deserve it. It's already there. And something happens in our life and we recognize it. Jesus takes the initiative here. The widow doesn't ask. She doesn't even know to ask for help. I think in this story, we're getting a glimpse of how God works that is essentially different from the kind of contractual give and take that many of us still carry around with us. If I do this for God, God will do that for me. That's not the way it works. Not according to this story. No. God has already done more than we could ever ask for us. And a part of what we do is to simply recognize that, to notice that, and to respond. God always acts first. God always takes the initiative. You can never get up early enough to be up before God. And so what we do is we discover the presence of God in acts of compassion, especially in those acts of compassion that aren't even asked for, that we don't even know to ask for. There was an evangelist of a generation before mine from Sri Lanka, what was then called Ceylon. His name was D.T. Niles. He was worldwide famous. And he lectured at a number of universities as well as teaching. He was Methodist, taught a lot of Methodists around the world, lectured at Yale. And at one point, someone asked him about how in the world he brought Christ to so many people, not only in Sri Lanka, but around the world. He said, "Oh, no, you've got it all wrong." He said, "I've not brought Christ to a single person. I go to their household, and he's already there. He's preceded me." I think that's what Luke is trying to say. God's love precedes us in the world. Is there waiting for us to recognize it? Is there waiting for us to take part in it, to take our part and to do our part? And believe me, anytime you see an act of love in the world, you have seen Christ. Doesn't matter who did it, especially if it's an act of compassion or caring that wasn't even asked for. The individual didn't even know what they needed, but it was provided. We have seen the face of Christ. I think we try to limit that love to certain communities, certain spaces, certain people. God will not be hemmed in. But like Jesus traveling through the countryside of Galilee, sees a need, has compassion, responds, and suddenly we realize this is more than some prophet. This is God. This is God's love at work in the world, and we can be a part of it. When we gather around this table, there's nothing we can do to earn the gift of this bread and this cup. There's nothing we can do to deserve it. If we had to deserve it, you couldn't take it and I couldn't serve it. But fortunately, we don't have to. It is a gift. It's a gift open to all. It is a gift that is there before we even know to ask for it, which is why we invite folks who aren't even baptized, maybe the first time they've been in church. They don't know to ask for this gift, but God is still at work in it. Aren't we blessed that God's love isn't dependent on us? Aren't we blessed that Christ is present in the world and in our community even before we know to ask? Thanks be to God.